This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 289, for the weekend of April 7th through April 9th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, where Art and myself talk about movies and other stuff. So, Art, how are things?
Things are going well. Things are finally calming down at work due to multiple reasons, and so that's good. I'll take it. And I went into work the other day, and they said, oh, we're getting a cold snap. Cold snap, man. It was in the 60s for most of the day. I don't think they know what cold snap means in Texas.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, what would be a cold snap in your previous residence?
I don't know, something in the teens, or maybe a 40 to 50 degree drop as opposed to 20.
Wow. Well, relatively speaking, let's talk about something that was cold to something that was kind of warm last week. So let's talk about last week's box office results. So I'm mainly talking about for the weekend of March 31st through April 2nd. So here's your top five. At number one, we have new release, The Boss Baby, at $50.2 million. At number two, in its third week of release, we have Beauty and the Beast at $45.4 million. At number three, we have another new release, Ghost in the Shell, at $18.7 million. And at number four, in the second week of release, Power Rangers at $14.2 million. And at number five, in its fourth week of release, Kong: Skull Island, $8.6 million. And there's your top five. Logan at 6.1, missed by another 2.4 million. But it was on 2,300 screens, so I don't know what you're going to... That would have probably been a miracle. So anyways, so there's your top five and a half.
Boss Baby, pretty decent showing. 50 million for a new franchise. What's that?
No, it's an animated movie, not built on A, cuteness of animals, or B, a previous, intellectual property.
Right. No, I agree. I wish we knew what the budget was. They're not showing the budget on that one. But 50 million, I think that's a good showing. Here we are. You were mentioning Logan 5 weeks out, over $200 million. So they've doubled their budget. So that is a unmitigated success.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of in between where... A Ghost in the Shell. That's really quite sad. We'll talk more about that later. But yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, I don't see anything in Box Office Mojo that might let us estimate what the budget might be.
No, they're holding back for whatever reason. I'm not sure why.
Well, they don't, like we were talking about last week with the shady accounting.
There is that.
They don't like to release too much of that type of information.
No.
Oh, and by the way, coming at number 40, a 2017 re-release of Donnie Darko, $57,000.
Wow, that's a throwback.
Yeah. All right, so let's close the book on last week's box office results. So now let's look at what's coming out in the theater this weekend. So Art, why don't you tell us about one of the two movies coming out in the theater this weekend.
All right. First up on our list, we have Smurfs of the Lost Village. It is currently 33% rotten. 48 reviews counted, 16 fresh, 32 rotten. 85% want to see it out of 43,000 users. In this fully animated, all-new take on the Smurfs, a mysterious map sets Smurfette and her best friend, Brainy, Clumsy, and Hefty on an exciting and thrilling race through the Forbidden Forest filled with magical creatures to find a mysterious lost village before the evil wizard Gargamel does. Embarking on a roller coaster journey full of action and danger, the Smurfs are on a course that leads to the discovery of the biggest secret in Smurf history. Rated PG for some mild action and rude humor. Genre is animation, comedy, kids and family. Directed by Kelly Asbury. Written by Stacey Harmon and Pamela Ribbon. No runtime listed. So we got Demi Lovato. We got Rainn Wilson, Joe Manganiello, Mandy Patinkin, Jenny Pootie, Jack McBrayer.
Skeleton cast.
Yeah, I know. Not a whole lot going on there.
Wow.
Brittany wants to see this. I think we'll see for Aubrey. We saw the other two. I think we own both of the other two. So, not that I spend a lot of time watching them. But it looks like there are some funny bits in it from the trailer that I've seen. Other than that, I can't really say very much.
Yeah, I didn't watch the trailer for this one because I don't think there's any chance I'll be watching this.
Yeah, especially if you haven't seen the first two. What's the point in coming in?
My only exposure to the Smurfs is that I always watch the last 5 minutes because that was the lead-in show to Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Doesn't really hold a super special place in the heart. Hey, here's some vitriol from David Ehrlich of IndieWire. The rare modern kids movie that offers absolutely nothing to anyone over the age of 5. But he did give it a D-.
Okay.
Calvin Wilson from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Young children will be entertained, but for the rest of the audience, pretty colors just aren't enough. Pat Padua from the Washington Post says, most people would be better off sticking with Teletubbies. And then Movie Mom, Naomi Now, whimsically imagined and a lot of fun. She gave it a B.
Okay.
And just for giggles, Francesca Rudin from the New Zealand Herald. The result is a harmless, fun, and largely forgettable film that will keep the littlies happy these holidays. That's a fresh review, but the rating was 2.5 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
So, all right. So, unless there's anything else we can talk about the Smurfs, we can move on to the next movie.
Oh, we can move on for sure.
All right. Well, here we go with Going in Style. This is currently 42% rotten on the tomato meter out of 52 reviews, 22 fresh and 30 rotten. And 93% want to see it out of a scant 5,227 Rotten Tomatoes users. So here's the description. Oh, here we go. Oscar winners Morgan Freeman for Million Dollar Baby, Michael Caine, too many movies to list, and Alan Arkin team up as lifelong buddies Willie, Joe, and Al, who decide to buck retirement and step off the straight and narrow for the first time in their lives when their pension fund becomes a corporate casualty in director Zach Braff's comedy Going in Style. Desperate to pay the bills and come through for their loved ones, the three risk it all by embarking on a daring bid to knock off the very bank that absconded with their money. This is PG-13 for drug content, language, and some suggestive material. The genre is comedy, written by Ted Melfi and directed by Zach Braff. This will cost you 97 minutes. And your cast. We already talked about Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, and Alan Arkin. We have Anne Margaret as Annie, Peter Serafinowicz as Murphy, Joey King as Brooklyn, John Ortiz as Uncredited, Matt Dillon as FBI Agent Hamer, and Christopher Lloyd as Milton. Yeah. I don't know about this one either. I like Lost Vegas. I don't know if I'll watch this one in theater.
No, I'll catch this on cable later or maybe Netflix. This genre doesn't really appeal to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to look up. I remember another movie with senior citizens that hold up a bank, but it was a completely different one. I'm going to see if I, oh my God, was that called Going in Style too?
No.
Yeah, it was.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Three friends who are living on the dole decide to organize a bank robbery. So this was in 1979. And we had George Burns, Art Carney, Lee Strasberg, probably a bunch of people but I remember watching this and, you know, I enjoyed it. But you know, to be honest, I was 9. So, cause I think their idea for, not being detected where it was the funny mustache and glasses thing.
Yeah. It makes me think of, you know, movies like, was it Space Cowboys or what was the one about Vegas?
Yeah. Lost Vegas. Last Vegas.
Last
Vegas, yeah.
You did mention that. So, yeah, it's that genre of, you know, older comedy, older people, you know, just a geriatric view, slice of life. These are, you know, big names, heavy hitters in the industry. It'll be interesting to see how this does, where it ends up.
Okay. So that's going to end our look at the two movies that are coming out in wide release this weekend. So now let's move on over to share time. Art, I don't think we got any voicemails, did we?
We did. Tad, two.
Oh, okay. All right. So we figured out that we have a voicemail from Tad. So we're going to play that right now. So take it away, Tad.
Hey, Backseat Box Office. This is Tad calling in. What have I been watching? Okay. I have been watching Into the Badlands. It's the second season. It's about two or three episodes into the second season. I'm still really liking that show. It's pretty good. It's kind of like the old Kung Fu movies that we used to watch on Black Belt Theater on Saturday mornings when I was a kid. But actually has some, you know, pretty decent story, good plot, and some character development going on. So I'm liking it pretty well. Hey, this is Tad again. I lost coverage, cell coverage there on the way. On my way home, I go through this little pass there, and there's no cell coverage in there for a few minutes, so I forgot where I was when I called. But anyway, so I've been watching those two shows. I've been watching a few others, but I'm not really talking about those right now. The wife got the box set of Little House on the Prairie, all 9 seasons, for her birthday. So I've been watching a few Little House on the Prairies. Still don't like the show. Didn't like it when I was younger. Don't like it now, really. Although I will watch this. It's tolerable. Some of the episodes are tolerable. And I'll watch those with the wife just, you know, because she likes it and, you know, do something with the wife. But let's see. Can't really think of any movies I've been watching. Oh, you guys were talking about these giant mosquitoes and that they, whatever. Anyway, what I think you guys were talking about, they're called crane flies. They kind of look like big mosquitoes with big long legs. It's a common myth that they eat mosquitoes. Actually, if I remember right, what they eat is, I can't remember what it's called, but it's essentially decaying plant material. So they just basically eat, you know, dead plants, is my understanding, if I remember right. My dad's a wildlife biologist, and I remember asking him about it one time when I was younger. This is Tad. Have a good, thanks for the show, and I'll talk to you guys next week. All right, bye-bye.
All right, thank you, Tad. Okay, so I noticed that you cut out a little bit, and you talked about a second TV show. So the next voicemail, you're going to have to pick back up what that second show was. So, I have a friend that's been telling me about Into the Badlands, and they were good. They rebroadcast season one the day that it came back for season two, and I forgot to record it. But I think it might be on Netflix. I'm not exactly sure about that. But anyways, I've heard really good things about Into the Badlands. And I'm sorry about Little House on the Prairie, but, you know, sometimes marriage is about compromise and sacrifice.
Taking one for the team.
Yeah. And thank you for the biology corner with the mosquitoes. I did not know about that. And I'll have to relay that to the rest of the group or the game group. All right. So now that we finished Tad's voicemail, yay, editing. Okay, Art, what have you been up to?
Okay, so as far as watching things, it's been pretty light. So I am still digging through Legends of Tomorrow. But I started watching, what was the name of it? 13 something. It's a new, Brittany already burned through the whole thing of it. 13 tapes, 13 messages, 13 something. It's about a girl who dies and she leaves these tapes behind, and it goes back and forth between present day and before she died as he's listening to these tapes in retrospect. She absolutely loved it.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix, yes.
13 Reasons Why?
13 Reasons Why.
Okay.
Okay, but the reasons are they're on these tapes. They're on audio tapes, and he's listening to them. So anyway, Brittany already buzzed through the whole series, and she's very sad because she typically won't listen to things that are just one season. She mm-hmm. listens to things that have 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons, so she just keep watching and watching and watching. But she heard really good things. She checked it out, and she really enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying it so far too. And it's given me too many things that I need to. I also saw The Magicians and another trailer of that one really caught my eye. I've been wanting to pick that one up for a while, and that one's been floating in the you may like because you watch this, you should watch that, and so I'm getting overloaded. But other than that, I did not watch very much because, like I said in our last show, I had just finished day one of the Gamer Nation Con, which is the con for the Order 66 podcast, had 3 more days of gaming, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and just board gamed like crazy, met a bunch of people, met the guys who all do the podcast. It was really a lot of fun. They are the main reason why I finally got back onto Facebook because they're all local here to Dallas. Played so many games, played Lanterns, played Shadows Over Camelot, played Evolution, played Alien Frontiers, one of my favorites. Got to play Gamer Nation Studios has released a number of games. One of them is called Eons, and there's an expansion for it. And now they're currently working on Eons the Dice Game. And so I got to beta test that with one of the main designers, who is also one of the hosts of this podcast, and really enjoyed that. Played maybe 3 more sessions of Artemis. I think I got 4 total sessions over the course of the 4-day con. Mm-hmm. And Saturday night, they did a whole bring your own beer situation. I brought a 64-ounce growler and started hitting it hard Saturday night and then rounded up everybody for a game of Artemis. And so I was drunk driving a spaceship all night. So that
Which I'm sure is not the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah. No. The guy who ran this, he assured me that was not the first time it happened, but it was pretty epic. And we had a lot of fun, and I managed to not run into the black hole. So, hey, it was a win. But yeah, it was just a great convention all around. Met a lot of really great people, had a lot of fun, and I totally will continue to do that in the future. Next year, I will happily be going back to Gamer Nation Con. And I think that about wraps it up for me. I'm trying to think. Oh, I got to playing some Magic the Gathering, played some Commander, where it's a different format. It's more casual. The guys are real friendly. We had a lot of fun. It was a really good time. So that wraps up for my share time. Did not watch a whole lot because I was gaming all weekend.
Okay, so if you had to estimate how many people were at this Gamer Nation Con.
Oh, it's small. I would say a couple hundred. It is not a big con. Yeah, it's not a big con. It's very small, very intimate. But as podcast cons go, we had people from Canada. We had people from Germany. We had people from Norway. A very small international con, very similar to like what Fear the Boot does. So small con, but it's got a big reach because it builds that community through the podcast and through their own set of forums where everybody stays connected throughout the year. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, there were people there who had been coming all 4 years and had been traveling that entire time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so just a little more information on 13 Reasons Why. I guess it was a 2007 YA novel. And it would hit number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list in July 2011. And now it is a, original series on Netflix. So you can catch it on Netflix. Which I'm sure we talked about already. All right. Not to make you feel bad, Art. I really didn't watch a whole lot either, but I did get around to finishing Legion. I really like this show, but the warts on this show for me is that we really didn't get to know the supporting cast a lot or very well. But, you know, be that as it may, I mean, it's up for debate whether there was room to really to have those storylines kind of developed with the secondary characters when, you know, what was happening to the main character was so interesting, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And you, I guess you kind of need to tell that story. And, you know, in addition to that, this is season one, and usually you get a shorter run in the first season. So maybe it will be better next time. But I really enjoyed all of the actors and actresses, and I'm really excited to see how it's going to what they're going to do in season two. I just hope they keep the same guy, because I've been told this is a guy who worked on Fargo. So I don't know if he's going to continue to work on Fargo or this is like his thing. And I was talking to a girl at work today about, do we think that we're going to have like McAvoy show up at some point? I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. But I would definitely recommend it. Definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I've been hearing other stuff about it from other places. So,
well, I mean, because there's a lot of psychological tropisms happening, it totally fits in with FX. You know, the same network that brought you American Horror Story, it totally fits in. But then again, I mean, everything that's happening, you know, kind of fits in with the universe that they're telling the story in, kind of thing. Yay, X-Men. Okay. And the other thing, I finished episode 3 of Killjoys in season 2. It definitely got weird. Instead of your typical crime story or trying to track a guy down, they threw in a monster story that actually builds on the mythology a little bit. So I'm interested to see where they go with that. So Killjoys will be the thing I'll be watching next. Haven't gone to the theater for a while. Almost went to go see Beauty and the Beast, but I ended up getting drafted for grocery shopping, so that didn't happen. Which I'm not really that sad about. Disney has enough of my money, even though I'm probably in for the next 10 Marvel movies and Pixar, of course. All right. So games. We played Zaya again last Friday for 3 hours, even though we only played a 10-point game. I'm dying to play a 20-point game so all of us can get to tier 3 ships. If you haven't played even familiar with Zaya, you're not going to know what I'm talking about. But it's, you know, pro tip, you got to read the rules, man. I'm still getting rules wrong. So that's on me. We're really, really liking it. I'm going to have to, I bought some cardstock so I can print some player aids that are on the Board Game Geek for Zaya. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen these, but these are really good. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to play it tomorrow night. We did another 20 minutes of Fuji Flush, two more converts of people that, or one, actually one more, that they said this game is really good. So anyways, not sick of it yet. I don't know if I ever will be, but, all right. So that's going to end my share time. So now, I think we're going to mosey on over to news. So Art, what tab am I closing first?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I just wanted to briefly mention, you're talking about downloading and printing out things for Zaya. Somebody went through and they made some additional ships. I printed out, there's a Millennium Falcon in there. And I actually bought a little Millennium Falcon micro machine. It has a little thing that it fits on the Zaya standee. So that I have extra little ships in my box and extra little player cards that I have yet to play with. But somebody's out there making them. I ended up tracking that guy down and sent him a note. I was like, yeah, I don't know how desperately in need of geek gold you are, but I would totally like one of these for the ghost. And he's like, yeah, I've thought about it. So just saying.
Yeah, I was going to say I might have, you know, smaller version, because I know that the X-Wing scale of the ships, I think, is a little too big.
That's too big. No, that's too big. And Armada is too small.
True.
So you find the small scale micro machines, and they're almost just right. They're a little on the big side. But for, you know, for the Falcon, Falcon's a decent sized ship, so I think they look okay on the board. Okay, so I will go with this one. Normally I try to build up, but I'm gonna go big. So the person who wrote the Forrest Gump screenplay is going to be writing Dune. So they're bringing Dune back, and Eric Roth is working on the new film adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune. So that really caught my eye, because I really enjoy Dune. I really enjoy the epic grand scale of it. I've never read the books, but I watched the first movie, and I even watched the entirety of the sci-fi miniseries. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do. Do they continue to make it, you know, a grand epic? Are they going to break it up in several movies, or are they going to try and do it a one and done movie? It'll be interesting to see what direction it takes.
Yeah, I 100% I knew that you were going to talk about that. I know you're going to talk about it first, but I didn't even bother.
Yeah, it's classic science fiction. And that's totally in my wheelhouse.
All right, so let's talk about less than classic science fiction. Transformers. So apparently Mr. Bay has said that he has, I don't know if he has scripts or treatments for 14 Transformers movies.
They're just cranking them out, man. Rubber stamping them.
The number is likely the result of the Transformers writing room initiative several years ago, which laid the groundwork for the future of the franchise over the next decade or so, including direct sequels, spinoffs, and more. Last night, though, the fifth in the series and Bay's last, marks the first film created from this initiative. And they said one of them is likely to be the Travis Knight-directed Bumblebee.
Yeah.
And then an animated prequel about Cybertron.
Bumblebee is also supposed to be a prequel.
It says spinoff here. So I will defer to your Transformers lore.
My current open tab from MovieWeb says Bumblebee spinoff starts shooting this summer, and it will be a prequel. And also they dropped a little tidbit about 14 other scripts coming out of this writer's initiative. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes, how it possibly changes after Bay walks away. I know many, many, many fanboys who will be happy over that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that all goes. But yeah, in a somewhat similar range, Jeffrey Dean Morgan joins Rampage. Have we talked about them working on a Rampage movie?
No.
I didn't think so. I know we spent several times talking about the Rampage board game at one point or another. And I just thought it was interesting that someone else is kind of going to that well of bringing games to the big screen. Jeffrey Dean Morgan is interesting actor, you know, with everything that went on with The Walking Dead and then going back to Supernatural, and you know, he's just all over the place right now. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do with a Rampage movie. Giant monsters crushing buildings, eating people, getting points, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know, we'll see what happens, but that kind of caught my eye. What do you got, sir?
All right, so I don't know where you're at with the remake of It, or the reboot, or whatever you want to call it.
I was never a fan. I have never seen the movie. I've never read the book. I'm not a huge Stephen King person.
Me neither, but I do need to share this one. This is from IndieWire, where they don't like a lot of things, at least stuff that I like. But anyways, headline is, the It trailer is already making it harder to be a professional clown. another day, another weird clown story. The trailer for It was streamed nearly 200 million times within a day of its release, but not everyone is happy about it. One suspects that a good deal of the 15,000 viewers who have given it the dreaded thumbs down may belong to the same profession as Pennywise himself. Clowns are upset that they're remaking this movie. It's going to be bad for clowns, says Guilford Adams, who for 20 years has performed as Gilly. Clowns have long been a source of irrational fear, a phenomenon to which the 90 miniseries adaptation of It, starring Tim Curry's Pennywise, certainly contributed. It's ruining our business, Nick Kane, a.k.a. Mr. Nick, added. It's a dying profession, and the people who do it and scrape together a living have to grapple with the fact that it's cool and hip not to like clowns. The ultimate prick in this is that it's going to turn young consumers away from an art form that's sweet and nice and not about the Kardashians and Minecraft. So, yeah, clowns. I don't know if it pushed it over the edge, but yeah, it does seem that clowns are just scary now.
Yeah, they get people going. I've never understood it. Doesn't do anything for me. I like clowns. I had some friends who were professional clowns. Taught me everything I know about balloon animals. Mm-hmm. So they were very nice people. But yeah, it makes people scared of clowns. I can see that. okay. So, Wonder Woman director, why the superhero movie trend can continue. So, Patty Jenkins believes the superhero genre can continue indefinitely. Indefinitely, I think, is a very big statement. There's a WonderCon panel, 2017. She was asked about the phenomenon that is superhero movies. And her quote is, "That's the great thing about the diversity of superheroes, and one of the reasons why when people say, is the superhero thing gonna die, or whatever, I always think it's so much bigger than that. It's not about superheroes. It's about the method of universal storytelling that all people have that is not of one religion, one thing, that America ended up inventing as a way to tell these metaphors about all different kinds of states of being. So to me, they're the same as the Greek myth, they're the same as the Roman myth, or the religious figures of every religion. These are our common characters that we use to express stories about being a better person, or what would you do if you were faced with various things. For me, that's an incredibly powerful thing. There's a million movies to be told with these common characters." And so it goes on to make comparisons to cowboy movies and pirate movies. How, you know, those eventually died, but you know, she thinks these will live on. I don't know. You know, we talked about this before, and I made the comparison to how long Westerns ruled the roost. And it was, if I remember, it was 50, 60 years of extreme prominence. And then even past that, you know, another 20 where they still were coming out pretty regularly. Now that genre is pretty dead. But, you know, even if we started with the first big Keaton Batman, you know, we'd still have another 30, 40 years of getting superhero movies. Will it never die down? I don't know. That's a big statement. You know, the media is going to change in such drastic fashion. Things change so much more quickly now with the advent of you know, computers and technology. It'll be interesting to see where it all goes. But yeah, it's definitely not going away soon, anytime soon. And I'm very, very happy with that.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to say. I mean, it's just like the floodgates are open now.
Yeah. And look, as far as we are into it now, we're only just now getting this very strong female character being directed by, you know, a female director.
Right.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see. This is a launching point for even more and different types of stories that we can see in the future.
All right. So let me transition over to another Marvel story that came out. Freeform. If you remember, Freeform used to be ABC Family. I think they got rid of the family so they can start showing more like Pretty Little Liars and other shows or that kind of thing that are probably not so family friendly, or maybe at the edge of family friendly.
Yes.
All right. So Freeform, they're announcing a new live action comedy series from Marvel Entertainment called Marvel's New Warriors.
Ah.
10 30-minute episodes slated to debut on Freeform in 2018. The popular Marvel comic features six young people, brace yourselves, including fan favorite Squirrel Girl.
Mm-hmm.
story deals with that time in your life when you first enter adulthood and feel like you can do everything and nothing at once. Other characters will be announced at a later date, but other characters who have been part of the team in the comics include Nova, Scarlet Spider, Speedball, Marvel Boy, Silhouette, and Darkhawk.
Nice.
And even though I'm looking at the Dark Horizons, the picture that they show, I think it has Namorita or Naborita in the background. So we'll see if this goes. I mean, you know, at one point they wanted to do a spinoff of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That never happened. There's also rumors that they want to do a Cloak and Dagger show.
Hmm.
That's going to be a drama. So anyways, we'll have to keep an eye out for that. Art, what do you got next?
Okay. Paramount admits whitewash controversy hurt Ghost in the Shell. I saw some of the backlash about that. I really don't think that was the driving force of why that movie did not do well. I think it was just poorly executed. It had great visuals. I don't think the story's there. I haven't seen it. We're seeing how the numbers are dropping. But I don't know if the white cross controversy is, you got some people's ire up, but it really, any people who weren't going to see it weren't ever going to see it. That's just the way it was. It's an anime title. It was a very popular anime title, but the number of people who are actually, you know, super hardcore into anime, that's not a large audience base. We were talking pre-show. It's like, I don't need to see these things brought to live action. I like them as cartoons. Me and Brittany are still going back and forth, having our little tiffs and arguments over Beauty and the Beast. She loves the new Beauty and the Beast. I'm like, I prefer the cartoon. Just give me cartoons. I want cartoons. And I don't, you know, I see the problem with whitewashing. You know, we've had many conversations about it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's why this movie's going to lose $60 million. I think it's going to lose $60 million because they really didn't target their audience properly.
Yeah, it seems like most of the people that this would be in their wheelhouse probably don't go to movies in the theater.
Mm, yeah, a little bit of that too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what to say. All right, so you kind of brought up whitewashing a little bit, so let's move over, talk about, it kind of leads in to a short talk about Iron Fist.
Okay.
And strangely enough, this little blurb starts off with Netflix says, "Critic Schmidix, give us more Adam Sandler." All right, so according to a new report from Variety, Netflix's latest Marvel series, Iron Fist, attracted more eyeballs during its premiere weekend than Luke Cage, Season 2 of Daredevil, and yes, even Stranger Things, despite the critical drubbing it received. It would appear then that the streaming site's original series sometimes mirror the box office successes of big blockbuster movies that earn abysmal reviews but do very, very well with audiences. Adam Sandler, who is currently halfway through an initial four-movie deal with Netflix, is similarly considered critic-proof. Last year, after his first Netflix film, The Ridiculous Six, was released, news broke that more people had watched the Western comedy, which earned a rare 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, in its first 30 days than any other movie on Netflix ever. No, it says ever. Accordingly, Netflix revealed late last week that they've signed the SNL alum for another four movies for a total of eight. Within a few years, we will have more Adam Sandler movies made for Netflix than there are Peter Jackson movies based on the Tolkien books. His third film with Netflix, Sandy Wexler, premieres on April 14th. So there you go.
Wow.
All right, Art, what do you got next?
Mind is just blown. I'm reeling from that. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is my last story. It's not even big. I was a little light on news tonight. But Keaton in talks for Burton's Dumbo remake. So we've talked on and off about the different live action remakes. I just mentioned Beauty and the Beast. So the Dumbo remake is coming, and Michael Keaton has been a little on fire. He's had a big resurgence in his career in the last couple of years. So it's interesting to try to, you know, pull him in. I looked through the article and I didn't catch where they saw him going. So yeah, that's what I thought. Keaton would play the villain, a man who buys a circus to use the flying elephant for profit. So I was kind of thinking the guy running the circus. So it'll be interesting to see where this all goes, where this turns out in the current crop of live action. Is it as good as the original? Is it better than the original? Where are we going to end up with that? Are they going to keep cranking them out and being successful? I don't know, but Michael Keaton seems like a really good choice.
Yeah, well, I will say again, that's the plan by Mr. Disney, is to keep making films or keep making films and or TV to get the people to the parks. Right. So opposed to trying to come up with new characters and new stories, I mean, they can just cycle through all of the animated.
Yeah, you know? But like my question is, I thought animation was cheaper to do. Is that becoming no longer the case?
I think maybe it makes it more justifiable if they say we're going to do live action, you know, because now we have the ability to do live action right, as opposed to remaking it animated.
Okay, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
but I don't know why.
Yeah, that would be interesting to try and find out, to look into. But yeah, there are definitely things they couldn't do in live action they could do it animated, and that's why they made that choice. And now those things that they can't do are fewer and farther between, and maybe that's why they're making that move. Don't know.
All right, so my next two stories, or actually they're kind of half stories that kind of mesh together a little bit, but I'm pretty sure that Art is not going to have any interest whatsoever in either part of this. So, half story number one, you can now watch Netflix offline on Windows. So if you are a person that has Windows 10 on any type of computer, you can go to the Windows Store and download the Netflix app, and it will let you download certain shows. So you can watch them offline. You don't have to be internet connected to watch it, kind of thing. We kind of reported it a couple months ago,
mm-hmm.
That you can do that with the iOS or the Android, but now, you know, you kind of have mobile apps on your computer now, which, you know, Apple's been doing the same thing, but Netflix, the Netflix app on Windows, you can do that. And then the other thing that Art doesn't care about at all is that one of the things that stops some people from cable cutting or cord cutting is sports. Some people that are really into sports, you kind of have to have cable to watch. Well, Amazon has struck a deal with the NFL that you're going to be able to stream Thursday Night Football on with your Prime subscription.
So
it's not really, because for the people that don't watch the NFL, Thursday night and Monday night are the only nights where the games are not broadcast on a regular broadcast station. Thursday nights are on the NFL, are broadcast on the NFL network, and then Monday nights are on ESPN, kind of thing. And so there, it's still not going to help you watch Monday Night Football, but you'll be able to watch the Thursday Night Football with your Amazon Prime. Even though some people have said that they need to stop because the games are terrible because they don't have the whole week to prepare and all that. But anyways, that is, hopefully, you know, if things go well, maybe they'll, you know, Amazon will start doing more. So anyways.
Yeah. I was just listening to a podcast recently and they were talking about, I don't think it was Happy Jacks. Maybe I don't remember who it was, but they were talking about watching. There's ESPN, like a highlights channel.
Mm-hmm.
They just take the game, they cut it all down to just the important parts of the game, and games are like 30 minutes or less.
Yes, that's correct.
That blew my mind. I'm like, oh, why doesn't everybody just watch just the important parts, you know?
Okay, so what have we talked about the Red Zone channel?
No.
Okay, so when you buy the what's called the Sunday ticket, where you basically have a channel for each game that's on, and so you can watch any game you want, right? Because usually, if you're just trying to watch a broadcast, you know, channel 2 or channel 11 We'll just show you maybe a regional game, someone in your area. So you're probably in your area, you're getting a Cowboys game in the afternoon, or maybe a Houston Texans game in the morning. But anyways, what Red Zone is it's one channel, and they basically just show you if someone's about to score a touchdown, they flip to that game. So it pretty much makes having individual channels for each game obsolete. Every year, as a DirecTV subscriber, you get a free weekend to the NFL Sunday Ticket. Red Zone channel is on for 8 hours. I don't need to look at any of the other games, because if there are two people that are on the goal line or about to score, they just split screen. And so it is the greatest thing. They one of my wife's favorite show is Live PD. They basically do that for cops shows. So here is a vehicle being pulled over in Tennessee, and then here's a domestic violence call in Connecticut. And they get, and sometimes they go back to the studio and they talk about some of the things. Yeah. And so it's like Cops 2.0 kind of thing. I've been waiting for there to be a network that just shows highlights of reality shows. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but anyways. All right, so you're out, right? So I can talk about this last story?
I'm out, yep.
Okay, all right. Well, this I really don't want to coin or to legitimize this slang, but this almost reads to me like fake news. So Forbes.com has an article from Rob Salkowitz, who says, "I write about comics and the business of pop culture." All right, and so... High stakes tournament aims to make tabletop games the next esport. And so he's saying that esports, competitive organized play for video games, is now a $465 million global industry. And it's projected to hit $3.5 billion by 2021.
Oh, my goodness.
And so hobby games, so for everyone, you know, anyone that that we probably don't know. A segment, I'll have to explain, that segment includes board games, collectible card games, role-playing games, and assorted other forms of tabletop competition, represented a $1.2 billion market in the U.S. in 2015, according to industry site ICV2, with growth at a remarkable 29% of growth year over year. I think he's supposed to say after year, but and then they drop a fact about Gen Con that 201,000 people were at Gen Con last year. And so now there is a California-based social media company, Oomba, that builds software to enable and manage tournaments, leagues, and teams. And so they want to take the model of esports to tabletop games, so where you can win some decent money. Now, this was kind of an interesting read, because they talk about Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
They run Magic the Gathering Pro Tour. It's been going since 1996. I'm sorry.
Was on ESPN at one point.
An invitation-only event awarding a total of $250,000 in prizes. The winner gets $40,000.
Nice.
There are some other tournaments that offer $100,000 prizes. The Pokemon World Championships. Well, I had a decent chance to meet Eric Sommer. Is an invite-only event where the best players of the season compete for scholarship money, prizes, and the title world champion. They also have a Yu-Gi-Oh! World Championship. I know that they do Yu-Gi-Oh! Nights at the comic book store right by my house. All right, so this is where things take a turn, and I have to kind of like go outside and make sure the sky is still blue and I'm still on the right planet. Now, Uma is raising the stakes with a new tournament called Unrivaled, which the company hopes will be the largest annual tabletop event in the United States, as well as a large-scale proof of concept of its technology platform. So they're going to have six games. Number one will be Ascension. That's good. Actually not bad. Okay, mm-hmm. Munchkin, a fast and silly deck-building game from Steve Jackson Games. Not to put the board game hat on, but it's not considered a deck builder. Is it just considered a deck builder? I don't know about that, but anyways. Epic Spell Wars 2, a magic-oriented board game from Cryptozoic. Nevermore, a casual card game from Smurt and Dagger. Villagers and Villains, a dice and card-based quest game published by Studio 9. And then King of Tokyo, a dice-based combat game featuring giant monsters from Yellow. Ascension probably is pretty heavy in strategy.
Yeah, good solid choice.
But I can't see, I just can't see, I mean, because a lot of these are like luck type games. And I know that, you know, people get kind of bent out of shape a little bit about luck. I don't know. I just can't take it seriously if they're going to have Munchkin and King of Tokyo in there. Because, you know, King of Tokyo is considered a gateway game.
Yeah, totally.
So anyways, the tournament starts with competitive play at the local retail level in April-June. So probably right now. Winners will face off at the regionals over the summer. Champions from each region will then gather at Caesars in Las Vegas on October 27th to decide the grand prize winners for each game. Oomba, the prize for the tournament, total $250,000. So yeah,
it'll be interesting to see where it goes, if it goes anywhere.
Yeah, it's just I don't know, some of these startups, these names, I mean, not that I'm gonna say that Uber's the best one, but Oomba, I don't know, they come with a better name. But anyways, so apparently that's a thing, and we'll have to keep an eye on it and see. And I'll try not to flip my coffee table if I see the World Series of Munchkin on ESPN. Because I've seen the World Series of Dominoes, but not the World Series of Munchkin.
Hmm.
All right. Would you ever take part in a tournament like that?
Depending on the game, I'm interested. If I was going to take place in a tournament where I'd be playing the same game over and over, it would have to be one of my favorite games. Was,
yeah.
You know, Alien Frontiers or something along those lines, Abyss. With the games that are currently on there, a little less so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever do an X-Wing tournament, because I know that once you put the word tournament, people tend to get more serious.
Yes,
and absolutely. You know, I'm just there. I'm there for fun. You know?
Yeah, like I said, I played Magic this past weekend, but I played in a very, very casual format.
Right, right. All right, so that's going to bring us to the end of our little show here. So, everyone, thank you for joining us and listening to this episode of Backseat Box Office. Our website is backseatproducers.com. You can find back episodes and episodes of the other podcast, Backseat Producers. You can leave us a voicemail. You can comment on our blog. We actually got that one last week, but I think it was a spam. I don't know why I'm talking like this. So there's other ways that you can find, you can send, you know, emails to this or the other show or a bunch of other stuff. So, you know, just check out our website, backseatproducers.com. And with that, everyone, have fun. Go see a movie, play a game. Art, say farewell.
Fare thee well.